All right.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
How are you, Allison?
Good. I'm sad because we just watched this
movie. Well, it's a sad movie. I mean, it's funny,
but it's sad.
Yeah, and the acting's really good, which makes it even sadder, I think.
But I cried, and now I have to record this podcast.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. But other than that, how are you?
Other than that, good.
Good. Good deal. I'm glad to hear it. I'm also good. We're going to have our little Friendsmas after we record this tonight. I'm very excited. I have good presents for you all, so I'm very, very excited.
And I'm excited because I love getting gifts.
I also love getting gifts. I love gifting gifts as well.
Mm.
Allison's like, I'm a consumer.
I would say more of a taker than a giver.
Yeah, so we are obviously talking about the very new film, Don't Look Up, that came out on Christmas Eve, and it's like the number one movie on streaming services, I believe.
This is a
star-studded. Like, for real, it's wild.
We say that about everything, but this is truly,
like, truly
star-studded.
Yes, it's wild.
We got,
let's go through it. Jennifer Lawrence, Leonardo DiCaprio, Jonah Hill, Robin Morgan, Mark Rylance, Tyler Perry, Timothy Chalamet, Ron Perlman, Ariana Grande, Scott Mascuti, Haimish Patel, Melanie Linsky, Kate Blanchett, and Meryl Streep.
Who?
Lots and lots and lots of people that you know.
So many people that you know.
Yeah. And it's obviously directed by Adam McKay, who, let's go over his filmography.
Let's, because I was unaware of how extensive it was.
Yeah, so Anchorman, Talladega Nights, Step Brothers, The Other Guys, The Campaign, Get Hard, Ant-Man, The Big Short, Vice, that's the one I was thinking of. Don't Look Up, and Bad Blood coming out soon.
TBA.
With J-Law.
Wow.
Interesting. So, yeah, Adam McKay is pretty well known. If you catch my drift, you do. Because I'm saying it.
It's not a drift as much of a statement.
It's so true. So true. Okay, so we're going to go through the plot and background via Wikipedia, as we do. And, yeah. Don't Look Up is a 2021 American satirical science fiction film written, produced, and directed by Adam McKay. Where did it premiere? It premiered on Netflix. Yes.
Yeah, it's a Netflix
premiere. It premiered in theaters too.
Yeah.
I think it played in theaters as well.
Or I guess still would be since Christmas just happened.
That's true. LOL. Well, it says it was released December 5th in New York.
Oh, well, then that's probably when it had its, like, premiere, but it looks like it's a Netflix film.
Yeah, for sure. It had a budget of $75 million and made $1.4 million. In box office, yikes.
Well, you know,
well, it's also not done yet.
Also on streaming.
And streaming.
I mean, no way is it recovering that in the box office.
Oh, absolutely. But also, pretty much everyone in there is already wealthy.
But also, streaming revenue is, like, one of those things that's impossible to calculate.
Absolutely.
Like, so if things are often, if they're just released on streaming, you can see the budget, but you won't see the box office.
Absolutely. So I'm going to go into the plot. Kate DiBiaschi, a Michigan State University astronomy PhD candidate doing work with the Subaru telescope.
Gotta get that sponsorship in there, of course, though.
Discovers a previously unknown comet. Her professor, Dr. Randall Mindy, who's Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate is J-Law, calculates that it will impact Earth in about six months and is large enough to cause a planet-wide extinction event, which NASA internally confirms. And I love the scene where he, like, realizes that, like, it's gonna hit, where he's doing the math and he's like, shit.
He's like, we're done for the night.
We're done for the night. Accompanied by NASA's Planetary Defense Coordination Office head Dr. Teddy Oglethorpe, DiBiaschi and Mindy present their findings to the White House, but are met with apathy from President Janie Orlean and her son, Chief of Staff Jason Orlean.
Both idiots.
Idiots. Oh my gosh, it's so wild. I guess that scene where they were in the White House and stuff, they improvised a lot.
Yeah, you can tell.
Yeah, a lot of improv.
Oh, Jonah.
Oglethorpe, I know, he's so wild. Oglethorpe urges DiBiaschi and Mindy to leak the news to the media, which they do on a morning talk show hosted by Bree Evanti and Jack Bremer, who are Kate Blanchett and Tyler Perry.
Yes.
When the hosts treat the topic frivolously, DiBiaschi loses her composure and rants about the threat, prompting widespread online mockery, because she's a hysterical woman.
Who looks alt.
Yeah, alt. That's like, people don't like that. alt woman screaming at
alt
me.
Woman
who's educated.
Screaming at me, scientist. Not interested
in it. DiBiase's boyfriend publicly denounces her while Mindy receives public approval for his good looks. Oh my gosh, that was so wild whenever her boyfriend was like, discovers, like, I actually slept with her and she's crazy.
Yeah.
That was so wild. Yeah, and then Mindy is, like, the sexy scientist. Also, they call him Dr. Randall, which is really funny.
Yeah, that's, like, classic TV.
It's, like, Dr. Drew type thing, right? I think he goes by his first name. Let's see. The actual news about the comet's threat receives little public attention and is then denied by Orlean's director of NASA, a top donor to Orlean with no background in astronomy. She's an anesthesiologist.
She is.
He gets so mad. Mindy gets so mad that she's an anesthesiologist. When Orlean is involved in a sex scandal with her Supreme Court nominee, she diverts attention and improves her approval ratings by confirming the threat of the comet, announcing a project to strike and divert the comet and using nuclear weapons. Yeah, she had said, like, let's sit tight and assess. And now,
yeah, well, the midterms were 3 weeks.
Yeah, so it was going to benefit her.
Yeah.
And now it's going to benefit her to acknowledge the comment.
It's very clear that she was like, oh, I don't want to do anything to stir the pot. And then once the pot was stirred, she was like, we need to do a bigger thing that makes me look good.
Yes, for sure. For sure. So this mission successfully launches, but Orlean abruptly aborts. That's wild. Say that five times fast.
Abruptly aborts.
And when Peter Isherwell, the billionaire CEO of tech company Bash and another top donor, discovers that the comet contains trillions of dollars worth of rare earth elements, the White House agrees to commercially exploit the comet by fragmenting and recovering it from the ocean using new technology proposed by Bash and his Nobel laureates, in a scheme that has not undergone scholarly peer review. I love how this movie, like, really stresses the peer review process. Also, I'll say it's kind of funny watching this, it being in grad school, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. I mean, JLo's pretty realistic.
Just pissed.
Just pissed about everything. And yeah, pretty funny. Also, they don't really reference how funny it is, but, like, you know how.
Yeah, it's funny but sad. I love
when she snatches Xanax out of his hand.
It never gets, like, laugh out loud funny, really. Like, maybe once or twice.
But it's always like,
but it's always, like, laughing because it hurts.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, I get that.
I feel like a lot of people have criticized the fact that this isn't that funny. But it's like, it's funny. It's just, it's not a comedy.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like,
but it's going to be nominated. It's going to be in the comedy category at the Golden Globes, obviously.
Sense. I mean, it's sort of like,
no one dies from AIDS in it.
Oh, I was like, nobody dies in it. That's inaccurate.
That's like their.
I was going to say. It kind of reminds me of, like, the death of Stalin or something.
Yeah. Oh, it also, like, reminds me of that.
Where it's like,
we did an episode on that.
Funny, but it's not like ha 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 because it's terrible. Like, it's this really huge stakes, awful thing, but it's almost like so. Just, like, useless to fight against it, that it's funny.
Yeah, for sure. I would agree. The White House sidelines DiBiase and Oglethorpe while hiring Mindy as the National Science Advisor to co-opt him. DiBiase tries to mobilize public opposition to the scheme, but gives up under the threat from the Orlean administration. Mindy becomes a prominent voice advocating for the comet's commercial opportunities and begins an affair with Even T. So that's Cate Blanchett.
Yes.
And he starts it whenever, like, he and his wife are together. It's so sad.
Yeah, he cheats on his wife.
And love this. I hate it, though. The scene where they start kissing in the freaking launch of the.
I know. And everyone's like, what?
What are you doing? Oh, it's so wild. World opinion is divided among those who demand total destruction of the comet, those who decry alarmism and believe that mining the comet will create jobs, and those who deny that the comet even exists.
Which is 23% of Americans.
Yeah. Which, I mean, would sound you're exaggerating, but look where we are right now.
But it's not. It's probably almost an understatement.
An understatement? I would say so. I think that if this actually happened, more than 23% of people
would just say
it doesn't exist. Because it's easier, right? Yeah. DiBiase returns home to Illinois and begins a fatalistic relationship with Yule, a shoplifter she meets at her retail job. Played by Timothy Chalamet in one of his best roles I've ever seen.
I have to say, Timothy Chalamet is just absolutely killing it here.
He's so funny. I fucking love fingerling potatoes.
Fingerling potatoes. He's just absolutely killing it.
Yeah, he's so, so good. I love it.
Just, yeah, absolutely a star.
Yeah. Mindy's wife, June, discovers his infidelity. Becoming angry and frustrated, Mindy rants on live television, criticizing Orlean for downplaying the impending apocalypse and questioning humanity's indifference. I like both of the scenes where, like, both J-Law and Leonardo DiCaprio start screaming at the hosts, mm-hmm. and the hosts are like, well, we're just trying to have a good time.
Well, you know? I appreciate that, like, when she does it, they immediately are like, oh, the screaming woman.
Yeah.
But when he does it, and I mean, granted, he has built a relationship with them for in the sure. public at this
yeah.
point.
Yeah.
But when he does it, how they're way more likely.
Because he's a man. He's an attractive man. Yeah.
And like, yeah, and he's been on. And so far, he's been a voice that, like, everyone looks to and trusts. Yeah. And then he comes on and is like, we're all gonna die.
Yeah, absolutely. Cut off from the administration, Mindy reconciles with DiBiase as the comet becomes visible from Earth. Mindy, DiBiase, and Oglethorpe organize a protest campaign on social media against Orlean and Bash, telling people to just look up and calling on other countries to conduct comet interception operations of their own.
Yeah,
and
basically like begging other countries to take care of America's mess. I mean, it's not America's mess.
I mean,
it's clearly the world's mess.
It's true, but also,
but America is stopping the rest of the world from making it their mess.
This is climate change thing. Like, that's yeah. literally what's happened. Like, what, I mean, we yeah, were,
it's like
we're out of the Paris Climate Agreement for yeah, so long.
At this point, you're basically just hoping that other people take care of it.
Absolutely.
Because you're apparently not going to take care of it.
Yeah. And Ariana Grande's in this, and she sings a song called Just Look Up.
It's pretty funny.
It's pretty funny. She's really good. She's very funny. She's people very are so surprised that she can act, and I'm like, she was an actress
first. She was on Broadway at 13.
Yeah. She's really good.
And she was in Victorious, if we all remember. She was
amazing.
Amazing in Victorious. And then, you know, she's been in tons. She's going to be in the new Wicked movie. Y'all.
Yeah. She's great. And she's really good in this, too. She's so funny. The scene where she and her boyfriend, like, get engaged on the television after breaking up. Oh, it's so funny.
I love it. You can't be mad at her. You got to love her.
Yeah, she's
when
hilarious.
She's in Scream Queens, too.
Oh, she's so funny.
Amazing in Scream Queens.
Yeah, her death scene in Scream Queens is amazing.
I know.
It's so good. Orlean's administration launches an opposing campaign, Don't Look Up. Orlean cuts China, India, and Russia out of the comet mining deal, so they prepare a joint effort to deflect the comet. But their spacecraft explodes on the launch pad. Ooh, yikes.
Yeah, it didn't work.
Yeah, it sucks. Bash's attempt at breaking the comet apart also goes awry and fails, so Urshuel, Orlean, and others in their elite circle board a sleeper spaceship designed to find an Earth-like planet, inadvertently leaving Jason behind. They leave Jonah Hill behind.
Yeah, whoops.
Whoops. He's so funny. He's so funny.
Yeah, he is really good in this.
I love him. He's a great actor. President Orlean offers Mindy two places on the ship, but he declines, choosing to spend a final evening with his family, DiBiase, Yule, and Oglethorpe. It's really nice.
Yeah.
The comet hits the planet as expected, rendering it uninhabitable.
It's very sad.
It is.
It's a very sad scene when
they're holding hands
and they just know that there's nothing they can do. And so they just have a really good dinner and
yeah,
then they
just eat and have a good time. And they bought a ton of expensive wine.
And they talk about how much they love each other. And that's just it. And you're like,
ugh.
Oh, and you know what's even worse? It's like you can tell that at the end, everyone realizes. Not okay, it's interesting because not everyone realizes there are people still denying it all the way up until the literal very end. But you can tell that everyone else has realized, like, we messed up.
Yeah.
Really, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
But what's, I think the most interesting is, like, the rich people, the ones who messed it up because it would have worked. Like, it finally was going to work and they were going to do something mm-hmm. and they were taking it seriously. And then
they just greed took over.
And then it's like, but at the end, they don't even care.
Yeah, it's true.
There's literally 1,000 humans left in the whole world, not even on the planet anymore.
Mm. Yeah.
And boom.
Yeah. So there's an post-credit scene. Mm-hmm. After almost 23,000 years, the people who left Earth before the impact land on a lush alien planet, ending their cryogenic sleep. They exit their spacecraft nude and mostly empty-handed, admiring the planet. It's funny because they're like, wow, a 53% success rate. That's higher than expected. I'm like, that's not high at all.
No.
Like, that's not high at all.
Well, this is like, we were talking about this during the movie. So Bash's plan, which they don't really go into too much here, is essentially that they're going to send out these, like, drones that are then going to find the thing, attach to it, and drill into it and drop bombs in, like, strategic places on the comet so that it'll break up so that as the parts get scattered on the Earth, it won't really cause any devastation. Uh-huh. They'll basically control where it hits and, like, how much of it hits so they can collect it. And, like, on the surface...
Ideally, that's a good plan.
On the surface, this is a good plan. Like, everyone wins. It's going to basically erase the national debt.
Yeah.
It's going to, like, it, sure, that sounds good, whatever. But the, and this is what, like, Dr. Mindy originally, that's why he's kind of on board, is he's like, yeah, it's a good plan.
Yeah.
You know, they have the models and it all looks good. But the problem is, has it been done? And the answer is no.
And they waited too long
and
to test it more.
Well, and they can't test it.
Yeah.
What are you... I mean, this thing, from the time we even heard about the comet, we only had 6 months.
Yeah.
It, this probably took at least a month to 2 months to develop and create, even with, you know, the world's best scientists working around the clock.
Mm-hmm.
This still is an idea. It's a prototype. And you're resting the entire fate of the entire world on a prototype. Like, these people... Like, what's interesting is, like, the people aren't... They legitimately think it's gonna work.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, well, of course it's gonna work, because how could it not work? And it's like, well, it...
There's so much room for error.
Well, it's just the, like, the mindset of, like, everything will work out. Like, I'm not worried about it, because everything has worked out so far. I mean, they even say the very first time that they come in is they're like, people have come to us with plagues and destruction and tidal waves and all this stuff. And in the end, it's always fine.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It always works itself out. So why are we going to stress? If we stress about every little thing, we can't stress about anything. And that's kind of what their viewpoint is. Mm-hmm. And in a way, like, if you're, you know, the third richest person in the entire world, I bet you do kind of have that viewpoint of, like, well, why wouldn't it work out? Everything else I've ever
tried
has worked out magnificently. I'm going to be not only the savior of the world, I'm going to completely solidify America as the world's best country, and I'm going to solidify myself as the most important person in the world's most important country.
It's true.
Like, yeah, the, on the face value sounds amazing.
Yeah.
But the problem is you're betting the lives of 7 billion people plus all the plants and animals forever on a bet, essentially.
Yeah.
And a bet that, yeah, it, like we were, and we kind of mentioned, I was like, the what this movie has really made me like see a little bit is that like, people like this guy, the people this guy is based on, this Bash guy is based on, it's like, they are some of the smartest people in the whole world.
Oh, yeah.
They really, really, really are. And they are, but they just don't use it for anything but themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and good or bad, that doesn't really matter to
it's
them
just their needs.
As much as what they need. Yeah,
yeah.
They're all the most narcissistic people in the entire world, and they're hyper intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like all of this stuff that you have, all of this like power and good you could be doing, and you use it on a phone company.
Yeah.
So, and he like talks about how, you know, we can predict people's deaths with 96% accuracy, and we know everything about you. We have 40,000 data points on everybody. It's like, because he gets mad that he calls him a businessman, and he's like, I am a scientist, you fuck. And it's like, he is a scientist. You're right. I'm sorry. Anybody that collects millions and millions and billions of data point on people to track that, to learn about their psychology and their spending habits, that is probably some of the best psychological science being done in the entire world, is being done by like fucking Amazon.
Yeah.
But because
it's like
it's
marketing,
only being used to then make Amazon richer.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, imagine all what all of that data could mean for like government science.
Yes, like, it's insane. It's sad to think about.
It is sad to think about, because it's like, you're like, you have so, you have done so much good, and you're wasting it so you can have like a little bit. I mean, it's, I honestly, I don't think it's about the money at all.
Power.
For them. I think it's about power, because money, we talked about this. You told me about was the study?
There's the study that I took a positive psychology class in college, and they talk about how there is a max level of money that, like, will improve your happiness to a certain degree. Money will improve your happiness because you'll get everything you need. But there's a ceiling to that. So once you get to that certain amount of money, your happiness isn't going to increase based on the amount of money that you have.
Yeah, and it's not even that high if I'm...
No, it's... I don't remember what study is.
70,000
yeah.
or something?
Peak money, happiness. Because I know it's like a...
Yeah.
75,000. Or wait, no, peak happiness. Globally, we find that satiation is 95,000, 105,000. I'm not sure.
It probably depends. I mean, it could probably depend on stuff like inflation and stuff
absolutely.
Like that.
Absolutely. But there absolutely is, like, a limit.
But that's still, like, every single one of those estimates we've gotten is about 100,000
yeah.
or under.
Yeah.
Something that is, like, achievable by a lot of people.
Yeah.
In their life. And... just the idea that it's, like, I don't think it is for money. Like, I don't think they care about the money. They care about, there is no peak power happiness.
Yeah, exactly.
Like.
Yeah, that's what it is. There's a peak money happiness, meaning that you, like, get all of your needs fulfilled, and so all of that makes you happy. But then after that, it just seems like it's a power thing.
It has to be. It's like having that amount of money buys you.
That kind of grotesque money.
It buys you the president.
Yeah.
It buys you the whole world, apparently.
It's crazy.
That guy wasn't even the richest guy in the world.
Yeah.
He's only the third richest.
He has to be based on Marshall Applewhite, the cult leader for Heaven's Gate. No, it's all gonna be fine.
Maybe.
Just talks like that. It's insane. His face looks like him. It's wild.
I don't know. It's just like one of those things where it's like you... it's depressing because I think this movie, like, for me, really made me go, like... like, when she says that to the thing about, like, they're not even... smart enough to be
as evil as you think as you give them credit for, yeah.
And it's like, that's so true.
Yeah.
They really are just like...
so blinded by greed.
They're just people. They're people who are pretty smart. I would even say really, really smart people.
Yeah.
Who have narcissistic personalities,
mm-hmm.
who everything has gone right for because of resources, because of them, and because of luck.
Yes.
Like, one, yeah, they probably had legs up that other people didn't have. Two,
they probably worked at it.
They probably did work hard. I'm not saying anybody that made Amazon didn't. I'm not saying, like, you know, whatever, Tesla, whatever the hell. That didn't require some sleepless nights and some hard work and many bowls of ramen. I'm not saying, you know what I mean? I believe that. But
luck plays into it.
I believe luck plays more into it than almost anything else. Like, mm-hmm. you got lucky that everything you tried worked out. And if it didn't work out, you were lucky because you had a fallback that could then allow you to make another try.
That's true. I
definitely think there's a personality type of a person who's willing to take multiple hits and keep trying.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the same kind of person who then, when things do work out, has this, like, God complex.
Yes.
Where they're like, well, everything will work out because it's always worked out. And nobody else needs to worry because things work out for me. And in this case, what's best for me is what's best for you. Which
yes.
is, you know, the world not ending.
For sure.
But, like, I don't know.
It's wild. Then the president gets quickly killed and eaten by a native animal.
Yeah, hilarious.
And then they surround the other humans. And then there's another post-credit scene where Jason is alive.
Yes.
And it's very funny.
And we also talked a little bit about this, the idea that it's like extinction level events don't mean everyone dies on impact.
They're on impact, but, like, there's no resources.
There's no resources. You pretty much, that's the last generation of people.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's really interesting. This is an interesting film. I love satire as a form.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very, very fun. I think it's a really effective storytelling vehicle or whatever.
Yeah.
I think it's really good. And Adam McKay is a little hit or miss for me. I'm not a huge, like, Anchorman fan or whatever, but I really liked The Big Short, and I liked, what was that other one?
Vice?
The Other Guys was fun, though.
The Other Guys is pretty good.
Talladega Nights. The campaign is fun, too.
Oh, I love Talladega Nights, too.
Yeah, he has some fun ones. I guess I'm not a fan.
I feel like a lot of people complain because this movie isn't that funny, and I get it. Like, Talladega Nights, Anchorman, these things are known for very classic comedy, ha ha ha, really, really laughing.
Yeah.
This is not that. at all.
For sure.
But, you know, neither was Vice, and neither was The Big Short.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, he's kind of just grown up in his style a little bit, it seems like. But even then, what I would say is, like, I think this is, it's a satire, and it's about something really serious, and I think people complain because it's so heavy-hitting and, like, it's very obvious, but it's like, yeah, it's not trying to be, oh, I wonder what it's about.
Yeah, exactly. It is supposed to be in your face because, you know, one, it's a satire, and two, you know, it is trying to play on the urgency that is real of the climate crisis because it is urgent, and, you know, if we wait too long, you know, we're not going to be able to fix it, which is what the movie is saying, right?
Yeah, and exactly. It's trying to put this thing that maybe you know about. It's also expressing, I think satire, one of the big things about satire, and I don't know Adam McKay or how, you know, into the, obviously he cares about the climate crisis or wouldn't have made this movie.
But Leo obviously is like
very,
very big into
climate focused and all this stuff. I get that. But it seems to me like a very similar, like this satire is about conveying the feelings of the people who are telling us.
Absolutely. Like the desperation.
Yeah, rather than focusing on like, oh, the climate crisis is so serious, it's like about the feelings, what it feels like almost
to be aware
so much about this and to know that it's like, this is coming and this is going to kill us. Perhaps within our lifetime, perhaps
in 6 months in this case.
Perhaps in our lifetime, most definitely within the lifetime of like our children and grandchildren. It's like this, the fact, like, they're screaming from the rooftops, everyone's gonna die, and nobody cares. Half the people don't even believe them, and the other half don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
Like,
which is pretty realistic, I would say.
And I think, like, for a satire, I think that it's, like, appropriate for satire. I get that a lot of people can be like, this seems really preachy. But you're like, I don't really think it does it seem preachy?
I don't really think it, on the second watch, I've seen this twice, and it didn't really seem that preachy on the second watch.
It seems, like, to me, it just seems sad. It seems like this very, like, in my opinion, this movie seems, like, very nihilistic and defeatist to me.
Yeah.
Like, because they don't solve it.
No, they die at the end.
At the end, like, the billionaires, I mean, they're all hoping at the end, like, I guess let's hope that they can fix it. I'm praying that they know what they're doing. I don't want them to be wrong, but I think that they are, and I think it's too late. And at this point, all I want to do is live my life as best as I can with the people that I love and hope that it turns out okay.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, I just think that that's, like, a very defeatist thing. I don't think, like, if you, I don't know, I didn't see this movie and feel better, like, oh, we have to do something about climate change.
Oh, yeah.
As much as I felt like, God, this is so sad.
Oh, man, we fucked up. Yeah. And, like, yeah, we were talking about how we were kind of, like, envious of how fast they're getting their apocalypses.
If only it was, like, as obvious and equitable
as a comet. Yeah. If only it was as immediately visible as a comet.
And as equitable.
Yeah.
Climate change won't be equitable at all. The biggest difference between climate change and this movie is that why would the billionaires care about stopping climate change? Because all climate change is going to do is solidify their position in society more, because they're going to be able to outrun it for as long as it exists.
Yeah.
And we will be the ones who cannot outrun it. I mean, we are in a good spot.
Yeah, it's true. We're in middle America.
But we'll probably get gentrified out of here.
Yeah.
But, I mean, maybe not us. Maybe our kids.
I'm not going to have kids.
We'll probably be very old before anything serious.
Yeah.
One of the many, like, climate tornadoes doesn't take us
first. Oh, for sure. But there are going to be a lot of those, and I'm sure they're going to increase.
I've already survived one, bitches.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've already taken down one tornado. I can...
Ari was responsible for improvising all the riffing at the end of the song. Get your head out of your ass. Listen to some goddamn qualified scientist. We really fucked it up this time. She improvised all that, which is very fun.
I kind of thought, was wondering if...
There's a lot of improvisation in this film. I read that, like, a lot of the scenes with Jonah Hill were improvised, which makes sense. He's very, very good at that stuff. So, and I guess that they spent a lot of time... He spent a lot of time insulting Jennifer Lawrence and just trying out different insults on her.
And then when they try to kiss.
Oh my god, it's like,
hate you, stop.
Oh my gosh. So I haven't looked at this trivia beforehand, but this is interesting. Jennifer Lawrence filmed most of her scenes with a broken tooth, and due to restrictions in place during the COVID-19 pandemic, she could not get it fixed. It was added in post-production.
I have to tell you, I think it's so hard to not laugh at someone when they have a broken tooth. So good on all the actors in this.
Jonah Hill said that his notion of his character was, what if Fyre Festival was a person?
Jesus Christ.
I think he got it.
I think he did too.
I think he captured what he wanted to capture. When asked whether President Orlin is Republican or Democrat, director Adam McKay didn't reveal, but he answered, I don't think either party has much to be proud of over the last 40 years. I think it's a rich person thing. I don't think it's a party thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think she
had a picture with Bill Clinton, but so did Donald Trump.
I mean, to me, she seemed Republican.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really matter. The party doesn't really matter.
It really doesn't.
Because in the end...
Yeah, I mean, she's a selfish, wealthy person. Yeah. Like, I don't... Yeah. It was Jonah Hill's idea for his character to carry a Birkin bag everywhere, as he and the filmmakers thought it would add an absurdist touch if the president's chief of staff carried nuclear codes around in a $30,000 bag.
Do you read this top one?
Oh, the Chicks Club asteroid Jennifer Lawrence's characters mentioned at hit Earth 66 million years ago in what is now Mexico. The estimated size of the asteroid was 10 kilometers wide and resulted in 75% of all life on the planet dying. Known as the dinosaur killer, the asteroid left a crater estimated to be 150 kilometers in diameter and 20 kilometers in depth.
So a real asteroid 66 million years ago actually hit the Earth and wiped out 75% of all the life.
So this could happen.
So this would... It would knock out basically all life on Earth.
For sure.
If that happened. Well, again, it happened before.
It happened before.
Goodbye to dinosaurs.
Timothée Chalamet wasn't going to have long hair in the film, but when filming was delayed from April to November 2020, he didn't cut it during lockdown.
That was his real hair.
Then during a Zoom meeting, the director liked the way it looked on him and asked him not to cut it before the shoot. I wonder if all of it was him.
Ew! That was his real hair? Timothée Chalamet, I always thought you did. He's never really done it for me entirely, but that definitely knocked him down some more. I was thinking, he really looks like a guy you'd see in a gas station, and it's just like, oh, if he let his hair grow out for 6 months, that's just what he'd look like.
That is so funny.
Weird.
So DiCaprio wanted to make his character look as bland and sexless as possible.
Well, that's impossible.
That's impossible, Leo. Sorry.
And they really did not go with that.
No, they went with the sexy scientist thing. That's part of the plot.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, I think that... What was your favorite part of the movie? I really like Timothée Chalamet. He was so fun.
Timothée Chalamet is so fun in this movie. He really is.
He shines.
I don't know. I mean, I think they do a really good job, in my opinion, like, portraying how something like this would play out without necessarily making anyone seem like Emperor Palpatine levels of evil.
Which I hate.
Like, yeah. Because it's like, yes, there are people that are that evil, and yes, I do believe that there are people in this world that are that evil, mm-hmm. but do I believe that everyone makes decisions based on the fact they want it to cause soul harm to others, or that they...
I think they just want it to benefit them.
Or that
them.
They want that, or that they only care about themselves, like, it doesn't seem like that. It's like there's something wrong mm-hmm. with billionaires. There's something actually wrong with them,
yeah.
where they, like, lack the ability... It's like they're sociopaths with a god complex.
Yeah.
It's like they, and excuse me for throwing around a lot of diagnoses of people I never met, but it's like they...
I have DSM right here if you want to flip through that.
I'm sure that'll help me out. It's like they don't care about anyone but themselves, but they see themselves, they see their own successes as somehow beneficial to the world.
Absolutely, because like, the world revolves around them.
And that's how they justify this, like, hurting of other people. It's like, well, I'm not hurting other people because my success is good for other people. So why would anyone be against me? It's like they think they, like, deserve... And it's the same way where it's like, that's the same reason that like none of them can accept that like, yes, I grew up very privileged and had a lot of opportunities maybe other people wouldn't have had because they're like, no, I did this, I did it all. And I think like you kind of see that in this movie, like the billionaire guy, he doesn't come off the worst. The person that comes off the absolute worst in this whole movie is the president.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like she's the one who... truly is power hungry.
I love the line at the beginning of it, which was like, I want to die peacefully in my sleep like my father and not screaming like his passengers.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah.
For that, for the president.
Yeah.
So this is like the production aspect of Wikipedia article. After Vice was released, David Sirota asked Adam McKay to use his superpowers of humor and writing to create a climate change movie that would be different from the Mad Max type style post-apocalyptic films that they had previously released. In an interview with Entertainment Weekly, McKay described how he and Sirota came up with the premise of Don't Look Up while discussing the existential threat of climate change and their frustration over the lack of media coverage it was receiving. I don't know who this is from. I started talking to a lot of climate scientists. I kept looking for good news and never got it. Everything I was hearing was worse than what I was hearing on the mainstream media. So I was talking to David Sirota and we were both just like, can you believe that this isn't being covered in the media, that it's being pushed to the end of the story, that there's no headlines? And Sirota just offhandedly said, it's like a comet is heading to Earth and it's going to destroy us all and no one cares. And I was like, that's the idea.
It's Adam McKay there.
It makes sense. Yeah, it was delayed due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Filming commenced in November 2020 in Boston, Massachusetts, and then New York. And DiCaprio received top billing, which is surprising because I figured Meryl.
He's in it a lot.
Oh, he's in it more, yeah.
A lot more.
Marketing, while Lawrence received top billing in the film's opening credits. Interesting. We'll do the reception because it's
big
pretty
part of it.
Yeah. This is what people have been talking about recently, right? This is like the whole big thing. So reviews on the film have been mixed. On the reviewer aggregator website, Rotten Tomatoes, 55% of 217 reviews are positive, with an average of 6.2 out of 10. The website's critical consensus reads, Don't Look Up aims too high for its scattershot barbs to consistently land, but Adam McKay's star-studded satire hits its target of collective denial square on. Also, the Metacritic, which uses a weighted average, assigned the film a score of 50 out of 100 based on 46 critics. Indicated mixed or average reviews. Sorry, my mouth is getting dry. Sorry. I feel like some people just probably took their headphones out. The San Francisco Chronicle's Mick LaSalle praised the film and wrote, Don't Look Up might be the funniest movie of 2021. I don't know. Is it that funny?
It's not that funny.
It's the most depressing, too. And that odd combination makes for a one-of-a-kind experience. Writer-director Adam McKay gives you over 2 hours of laughs while convincing you that the world is coming to an end.
Yeah, that might be a little high praise.
Yeah.
That might be a little high praise.
I think that'd be a high praise.
It's not Taika Waititi. It's not for the wilder people.
In Los Angeles Times, Justin Chang wrote, Nothing about the foolishness and outrageousness of what the movie shows us, no matter how virtuosically sliced and diced by McKay's characteristically jittery editor. Oh my god, the editing.
Yeah, the editing. We'll talk about
Hank Corwin can really compete with the horrors of our real world American idiocracy. So the editing is so much. It fits at the end, kind of. But, like,
yeah,
it's so different. It's not
so
consistent.
The whole film is normal. They have a little style. It's good. It's a fine style for the movie. But every once in a while, they'll randomly intersperse
nature stuff.
Nature scenes. Scenes of people walking on the street. Scenes of people doing things. Like, sort of stuff you would see in, like, nature documentaries or you might see in other documentaries.
Yeah.
But the style is completely different. It's like
out of nowhere.
It's like a really clear camera, like clear, crisp colors, saturations, very beautiful.
Yeah, the color story is completely different, though.
Well, because they probably took it from other documentaries. I really don't think they shot. I think it's sampled footage.
It's very weird. I don't like it very much, which it fits at the end whenever the world is ending.
Yeah, at the end, and then at the end, there's basically like the scene where they're showing basically what everyone's doing now that the world is ending. And then they kind of cut that footage in and it sort of makes sense.
Yeah.
I think it might have been an attempt to make that footage cutting scene at the end feel more natural by doing it throughout the movie to remind us of like real life or something. But I think it could have been done one, I think just saving it for the end would have been fine.
Yes, I would agree.
I think everyone would have gotten it.
Yeah.
And I also do not understand why you either filmed on completely different cameras and completely different editing, or why you sampled from other things.
Yeah, it's very strange. Because
it's one of those two things. They did not film in the same style. I don't know why it all of a sudden... Like, there are other movie montages like that do a similar type of thing. Yeah. Especially in apocalypse movies, this is really common.
For sure.
Why, though, change, like, your whole style. Aesthetic?
It's very strange. It's, yeah, it looks completely different, and it's just, it's very jarring.
It takes you out a lot. Like, and it doesn't always happen at times that it
are fits. Appropriate. Yeah.
Like, the end, it fits, and you can kind of, like...
It's, everything's culminating. It's good.
It's sort of like in the Titanic. When they go through the cabins, and they show what everyone's doing. But, like, imagine if instead of that, they got a really, like, 2007 digital camera, and the style changed from beautiful romantic movie to, like, a Paranormal Activity level of filming. And then to a, like, solid, like, Planet Earth level documentary camera, and it just, like, switched between those things just for that one montage scene, and then they were back to, like, beautiful romantic Jack and Rose.
It's very weird. I don't know. The inconsistencies of the editing bothered me, but otherwise I really liked the film.
I also, you know, I'm not opposed to, like, for example, Spike Lee.
Yeah.
In some of his movies, sometimes he will intersperse real footage.
Yeah.
But
and do the right Spike thing, he did that.
Spike Lee doctors the footage enough so that it either comes at a very appropriate time at the end when it's okay to change the style completely.
Yeah, or it fits with the style.
Or he fits the style around the footage or re-edits the footage so that the style fits his movie so it doesn't feel completely out of place.
It just feels like they dropped and they click and dragged.
Yeah, like, it's stuff. Like, that's what you could have done. Like, you could have gotten, like, real world footage of natural disasters, of animals, and then you could have fucked with that footage a little bit so that maybe it fit in your movie a bit better.
That's what I felt as well. That really was kind of jarring for me. I liked it. I thought it was good.
I think it's good, too. I mean, yeah, is it, like, the greatest movie of the year?
No, but I liked it. I didn't hate it. I watched it twice. I mean, I didn't hate it that much. The acting is really good.
Really good. And I will say, like, I think the writing is, like, decent.
Yeah, I mean, the story is excellent, too.
Yeah, I just think it's, like, it's... I also do like that it's a climate change movie that's not...
Not about climate change, yeah.
Well, kind of. Not only just that, but, like, that it's a climate change movie that's a little different.
Yeah.
Like, this, a lot of times we see these, like, post-apocalyptic movies where it's like, oh, blah, and it's like, that's cool, but it almost adds a level of, like, too cool for what could happen after, as opposed to, like, the reality of
what,
like,
it's gonna be like going through it. Yeah. This person drives by my house all the time. Like, it's terrible.
Just, like, the reality of... It's not going to be that cool.
Yeah.
It's just like...
It's sad.
You're all going to be working your shifts at Dairy Queen until
and you're gonna have to
the
go,
end.
You're going to have to just say, I'm going to go home.
Yeah, there are going to be a good portion of people that die on the clock.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like... And it's sad. I know this was made way before this happened, but that tornado that just happened where those Amazon workers were killed and they tried to go home and Amazon said, we'll fire you if you go home. It's like, that is the kind of shit that we're gonna see.
Yeah.
We're gonna see more Katrinas. We're gonna see more... It's not gonna be like, whoa, Mad Max, desert apocalypse, we're all in, and the strongest survive, and it's new humanity. It's gonna be like, no, the people that can afford to outrun it will outrun it, and all the rest of us will slowly starve to death in the streets.
And that's just what would happen.
And that's what is gonna happen.
Yeah, it's what's gonna happen. Like, if... Yeah, it's sorry, but... anyway, I have... first of all, what would you give this film?
I think it is pretty good.
I enjoyed watching
it. It's not like a great... I don't want to watch this film again, really.
Yeah.
But it is a good movie, and I do think it's worth a watch. Do I think it's, like, the most amazing movie ever? No, the acting's good. It's pretty.
If you love Timothée Chalamet, you should absolutely watch this movie.
Honestly, if you like any of the actors that are in this movie, it's worth a watch.
Yeah.
I don't think Meryl Streep is pulling her best performance of an evil person here.
Yeah.
I do think The Devil Wears Prada, she is a significantly better, more well-rounded character.
I would say
so. Some of the writing is a little, in my opinion, not fleshed out on several of the characters. But the actors are so dynamic.
And they do a lot of improv. Jonah Hill is really good.
Just, like, the actors are so dynamic that, for me, it fills in those kind of gappy, one-dimensional character writings because they're so dynamic that they just, it makes you feel like they have this relationship you just don't know about.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the writing is not very dynamic. I would probably give it, like, maybe a 7.
That's what I was thinking. I'm going to give it a 7, too.
Because I do think it's worth a watch. I think the actors really do make this work. I think the idea is phenomenal.
Oh, the idea is so smart.
I think the plot is phenomenal. I think that the character writing is a little weak. I think the editing's pretty weak.
You're pretty weak,
and
yeah.
I think that I don't think this is a movie that's going to, like, insert itself in the zeitgeist and, like, make a huge difference.
Yeah.
But I do think it's, like, a nice satire, and I do feel like I understand feelings more now. Like, I feel like I walked away knowing more.
Yeah, me too. I think it's good. I liked that they, like, talked to weather scientists, climate scientists and stuff, and then kind of transpose that into, like, the feelings of DiBiase and Mindy.
I do think if, like, your goal, if you were going to, like, sit your uncle down and make him watch this because he doesn't believe in climate change, I do not think this would meet your goal.
No.
I do not think this is changing anyone's mind. I do not think it's necessarily doing anything for the conversation. But art doesn't have to do something for the conversation, in my opinion. You can just make something about how it feels or how scary it feels and the resignation that comes with realizing you have no power, and ultimately all of this is in the end going to be up to much bigger hands than us, and all we can do is kind of try our best.
We're cogs in the machine.
I mean, it's like, and all you can do is try your best and tell people about it and try to also not kill yourself thinking about it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think that it's nice for people who already think those things or who are having those feelings and who want a way to reconcile those feelings.
Yeah.
Who want some catharsis and some empathy coming from the world.
And also, like, oh, great. Wow, I'm not crazy.
Yeah, great movie for that if you're already on that spectrum and you'd like to just have a little bit of a calm down, a little catharsis moment.
Yeah.
This is a great movie for that. Don't, like, show this to your uncle that doesn't believe in climate change. It's not going to change his mind.
No.
And it's probably actually going to turn him against you.
Yeah, it's going to do the other way. It's going to go the other way.
So I guess if that was their goal, was to be like, this is the thing that's going to change the world, failed.
Failed. But it made me feel better.
But it did make me feel better.
So I appreciate that.
So for me, that's good.
Yeah.
Because I already believe all
this. Yeah. So this is a Letterboxd review.
Ooh.
It has one star.
From Jane.
So, fucking dog shit.
Oh, chum.
The worst thing I've ever seen in my fucking life. It is actually hilarious how shit like this even gets considered by actual human beings. His name is Adam McKay. Sorry.
Ma.
And yet this is far from McKay. It's trash.
That's good.
It's funny.
Write that down. TM.
TM. It's garbage. It's a train wreck. It's cringe. It's hypocritical. And it's ironic. An absolute disgrace to film and actually feel throw up arriving in my throat after even calling it a film. Whatever that word means anymore. Not a sense of comedy in sight. The satire has been lost entirely. The script being unstable, unfunny, uninteresting, and not provoking at all. The best way, and I mean the best way, to watch this piece of Adam McKay's excrement, you shouldn't be watching this anyway. Do not support this type of shit. Is to sit down, get some food, get a drink, and throughout the long, drawn-out, robotic performances-ridden, stale, plastic-industry-dominated bore fest of a runtime, stare at your floor with the TV muted and don't look up. Fuck you, Hollywood. Fuck you.
Wow.
Yeah. Whoa. That's from a Twitter page called Letterboxd Reviews with Frightening Auras.
That I am frightened. That is accurate. That is a scary person.
Yeah.
Wow. Maybe I need to start going to Letterboxd for my reviews. I've been doing IMDb, but okay. IMDb review. I only have one, but it's kind of long. This is 1 out of 10. No addressing the elephant in the room. My phone is being a little weird. It's like this little bar thing is not going away when I click it.
That's weird.
I know. So it's, I think, still okay, but okay, I'll just do it this way. No addressing the elephant in the room. Stopped watching 25 minutes in. This movie does not work for people who can think, in my opinion. It is not enjoyable at all. 2.5 hour movie.
Why did you watch 25 minutes of it?
I can guess how the movie keeps going on, and I would be surprised if it was any differently. I guess we'll find out. So here's the story I got. Here's the story as far as I got. A PhD student discovers a comet on her shift working a space telescope, calls her professor. People working at the institute come to celebrate the discovery. Group starts doing math on the trajectory, completely unrealistic scene. Person clearly never been around nerds.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happens.
Actually, you've never
sitting
had
around and doing and
oh,
doing
you've
like,
never had a sit-down dinner with my father.
Yeah.
And my brother, so maybe you actually don't know shit. DiCaprio as professor is completely stereotypical and unbelievable. It's both stereotypical
and unbelievable.
I can't believe they would do the stereotypical thing. I am sure he was supposed to play it like that. He should not have taken that role. So they find out it's going to hit the Earth. This is back to the comet. Call someone responsible. Get in an audio conference, which actually responsible head of planetary defense coordination office that exists in the U.S. against this sort of threat. They fly to Washington, D.C. to explain to Mrs. President, Meryl Streep, playing like she was in a sitcom, overacting, and seemingly not distancing herself from the role. Interesting that she wouldn't be distancing herself from the role while playing the role. What a bad actress. You have the feeling that she is amused about herself while playing it. I did have that feeling. She does not meet them from the first day, postpones meeting, and the second day she does not care. Because someone always comes up with end-of-the-world stories, and they are just some scientists, not from Ivy League, and all sorts of nonsense that no one would ever say. No one would ever say that.
No one would ever shit on Michigan State over Harvard.
You know,
that would never happen.
I would just argue that Dr. Anthony Fauci would like to talk to you. anyway. I don't understand how anyone could write this in this day and age. Okay. BTW, the professor, DiCaprio, had a really hard time explaining it because it is so complicated. I don't even know why he talked in the first place. They clearly did not watch because he becomes good at this.
He becomes good at this. Also, I will say, I'm like, scientists, you do need to lead with the most urgent thing.
Yeah, and, but honestly,
They wouldn't react well.
I also think that this is a common thing that... like, there are people that just aren't good at telling stories.
Yeah, it's true.
And scientists, this is the reason, like, fucking Bill Nye exists and Neil deGrasse Tyson are so famous, is because most scientists fucking suck at breaking shit down and explaining it to you. And they're very good at it.
Yeah.
Which is why 90% of their job is now explaining it to you rather than doing the research.
Yeah.
Like... their personalities. It's an entertainer thing.
Absolutely.
He's not an entertainer, so he's not good at it.
Yeah.
He's a scientist. And he doesn't know how to...
And he's nervous.
And he doesn't know how to break it down. It's like...
And he has a
panic. Because he understands it.
He has, like, a panic disorder, too.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Obviously, the head of Planetary Defense Coordination Office would have talked because it is his job. And the sentence, a comet of 5 to 10 kilometers diameter will hit the Earth in 6 months and 14 days and it will destroy all life on planet if we don't do something about it, is really not that hard to come up with for a professor. So, professor, student, and head of Planet D are... on a platform and discuss how they will proceed, and the idea is to leak it to the press and something else, and professor says he doesn't know how to talk to people because it's not his role, that thing. That's when I quit watching. I know they will be talking to a lot of people, and the pattern will keep repeating itself, and it will be as lengthy and as boring as it has been the first time, because how could it be any better? If it was bad the first time, they have showed it.
It was in 25... You watched 25 minutes of the movie.
Also, the idea that it's like, why would they have done this first thing and then do something different?
That's a movie.
They're just going to keep doing the same thing, obviously, because
that's how movies work.
Because that's how all movies work, is in the first 25 minutes, they just show the plot, and then they reiterate the plot for the next two hours. Especially 2.5 hour long movies. They like to generally try and get the plot out as fast as possible, so that the rest of the time, you're just watching the same thing happen over and over and over to keep you interested. It's like Shakespeare. Like, you've always got to repeat it 3 times.
It's true.
The whole story is ridiculous. Like, there would be one professor and no one else. And, of course, the U.S. is the first to discover it and is probably going to stay isolated U.S. story as well. Because that is the IQ the writing conveys so far. This person did not watch the movie at all.
Did not watch the movie at all.
I am assuming that no other scientist will discover it later.
You
watch for the next 3 minutes after you stopped watching, you might have kept watching because some of your complaints were immediately taken care of. I am assuming no other scientist will discover it later either, because it is too hard to find a comet that is hitting Earth in 6 months that is so big. And then the question is, what is this movie about? Is it about not addressing the elephant in the room because everyone is too distracted with everything else, right? So why does the movie not address the elephant then? Did she not scream into the camera that everyone was gonna going to fucking die? Wasn't that like a whole part of the movie?
Yeah.
Okay. If you want to make the point, then why not take something real, e.g. the war on Iraq, and just make a movie?
It's a satire! Does she know what a satire is?
She doesn't know what this is in reference to. Her very first line is, "This movie does not work for people who can think, in my opinion."
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Honey.
Okay. You do not even have to make anything up. It's not like this has not happened before. If you want to make it dark and hurtful to watch, why not take something that has happened and not change it the least bit? The culture is far beyond what this satire...
So you want to make a nonfiction, you want to make a documentary.
Yeah, that's what they're describing. The culture is far beyond what this satire is trying to criticize and has been for a long time. And by not using an actual elephant while addressing that elephant in the room is often ignored, that movie becomes part of the problem. You didn't even watch it. You don't even know what statement they're making because you watched 25 minutes and then gave up because you didn't like the initial reaction that they got when trying to reach the public. And you're not wrong. It's not a happy ending.
No.
But it's also... the idea that they're not addressing it.
Yeah.
I mean, she's saying they're not addressing it because they don't directly name climate change.
And it's like, it's a satire.
Also, everybody else's criticism is that it's too heavy-handed.
Yeah, and this
Her
person.
Criticism is like, it's not heavy-handed enough, actually. Okay. Why are you wasting more than 2 hours of people's lives teaching them and using something unfunny and hypothetical in a way where it could never happen? Actually, this did happen to the dinosaurs.
60 million years ago.
So, actually,
it has happened and
possible.
It can happen.
It's possible. Of course, there are a lot of science institutions watching the sky all over the world, and most of them have better equipment. And also, if a scientist discovers something like that...
She's really getting into the weeds here.
You know, also, if a scientist discovers something like that, they're going to tell their community. So everybody will be looking at it if they can.
That's the entire part of the movie!
That did happen in the movie. It was verified by like 100 scientists all over the world who all did the math. It was a peer-reviewed comment. We know because we have the data. Oh, my God. The Earth turning, you know? The Earth is turning, you know? No one can watch anything all the time from one location, except that it's the sky, and as long as it's night, you can. So, you're wrong, but I digress. Also, like, someone's the first person to see it.
Yeah.
I don't know how to tell you this, but someone is always the first person to see it.
And why wouldn't it be, like, a PhD student who's looking at the sky all the time?
And also, I think you're underestimating the amount of sky that there is. There's a lot of sky for us to see, and we're seeing more all the time. And not to say there aren't a lot of people looking at the sky, but I would argue that perhaps... it is possible that someone might look somewhere new sometime.
Yes.
Or that someone might look at something that has been looked at before, and then there is something new there.
Yeah.
I think that that's possible.
Certainly.
And don't worry, if you would watch for 5 more minutes, you would have known. Everybody, in fact, did get out their telescopes and look at the comet, yes. So it was all good. Okay. The people are used on working together and sharing data. It is what they do. So no, I don't want to watch the movie. Telling me that people don't talk about the important things, address the elephant in the room, they keep using that. From people that fail to address...
It's the only one they know.
People that fail to address the elephant. What is the elephant?
Stop talking about the elephant.
You're going to hate this. There are actually a lot of elephants.
Oh, no.
See how the movie maker did not understand he is criticizing something that everyone knows already and does not give a solution or say what's important to them. Because no one is going to ignore a comet that will destroy all life. Do you understand that the comet is the elephant, which is the metaphor
for climate change?
Do you understand that when people say address the elephant in the room, that's a metaphor, and that they are not in fact discussing an actual elephant, but rather a looming problem that is so large that how can we ignore it? Which is what this movie is about people trying to address the elephant and people not wanting to deal with it because it's such a large problem.
Yeah.
That is the point of the movie, is that we should address the elephant.
Even though it's easier not to.
That is, you are on the same page as old Adam McKay here. However, there have been actual elephants not being discussed, and he is too scared to name one of them.
Actual elephants.
He's saying there are actual problems that need to be discussed.
Like the war in Iraq.
But he's not discussing them. He's discussing a comet that he is literally discussing a comet that is going to wipe out
all of
life.
But it's not real, Allison. Why would you write it down if it's not real?
I looked at my teacher, and I said, when did this happen? And she said, it didn't happen. It's fiction. Then why would they write it down?
So good.
Which is the same reason why it happens. The bad things happen because you don't address the elephant.
Yeah.
They are trying to teach us something. Yes. And they have shown why that happens. They had someone's attention for over 2 hours and did not use it because they were too scared. They didn't even have your attention for 30 minutes.
Oh my God.
They did not have mine because, like the professor in front of the president, maybe you start with what you want when you want something. I could have done this movie in 5 seconds. People don't listen when it's important. Now, that's true. End.
Whoa.
Guess everyone knew that already. Why make it a 2-hour movie? Why make movies about anything? I know that there's a war in Iraq.
I know that there's a war in Iraq. All movies should be about the war in Iraq.
Because it's not being talked about enough. I know there's a war in Iraq. Why make a movie about that?
I feel like you just want to watch a documentary, chick. Like,
I've heard of it. Who cares? Why make movies about anything when movies are just about universal human experience? If it's universal human experience, why do you need to write about it? I already know.
We already know. There's no point.
Stupid idiot.
Da-doy.
Da-doy. I've been there. I am a human. What is art for? I don't know.
So funny. Wow. That's wild.
I know.
Okay. Wow.
Okay.
That was a wild ride. All right, guys. Soon we will be having a guest on at some point from the Retro Movie Roundtable, so go listen to them.
We have an episode with them. Well.
Yeah, I do have it. So go listen to their episode on Psycho that I'm on. It's pretty fun. Again, that's Retro Movie Roundtable, so thank you.
All right, guys.
Thanks. Bye.